This is the Bloomington Review with Jim Inman
on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Good evening, Bloomington. Happy Friday the 13th for you, May 13th, 2016. Or if you're waking up Saturday morning with us on the 14th, you survived the dreaded Friday the 13th of 2016. I think when I was in junior high, I think maybe even elementary school, I learned a word that was the fear of 13, triskaidekaphobia. I don't know why that word has stuck with me over the last 25, 30 years, but triskaidekaphobia is your word of the day, and it means the fear of the number 13. So I've taught you a lesson today here on WGCL, and very glad that you've taken that and ran with it, I guess you could say. Jim Inman here. Mr. Piller is on assignment this week. That means that he is out, but we've got a packed show for you this evening. Tonight is going to be a very informative show, and it's something we don't really delve into the medical world that often, but May is Stroke Awareness Month. And we're going to be joined in just a little bit by Sonia Pruitt. She is with the IU Health Bloomington Hospital. She's on the neuroscience team there. And we're going to talk about the very high-level information about stroke, what it is, what are the signs and symptoms of someone having a stroke, why timeliness is so important if you believe that someone is experiencing a stroke, and the treatments, and as well as some preventative measures as well. So Sonia will be on in just a little bit, and I know that you're going to enjoy the discussion with her tonight. Next week on the show, Mr. Craig Hickman, he is with ProBlue here in Bloomington. We're going to be talking about internet safety, and I think that this is always a timely subject. Again, something that we haven't talked about here on the program, I don't think ever, actually, since I've been the host of the Bloomington Review. You know, you hear the things about change your password and the Facebook things out there that are tracking, and you go and look on some online shop for a pair of shoes, and suddenly for the next 6 months, they pop up in ads all over your web searches and things like that. So those are things I'm going to ask Craig about, and some things that we can all do to be proactive in our security and our online presence, banking, shopping, all of that stuff. If you've got a question about internet safety, and anytime you have a question, you can always go to WGCLradio.com and click on the Bloomington Review link, and my contact information is there. You can always post up also at facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview. Let us know if you have any questions about anything. We're glad to get you in contact with our guest here on the program and see what we can do to provide the best information and the most up-to-date information for you here on the show. Then the week after that, we'd originally planned for Indiana State Police Trooper Kent Rolfing, but he has had a scheduling conflict, so maybe having an estate planning attorney come in to talk about some things, and especially going into a little bit of the younger side of the world, if you will. And then Julie Warren will be on the 1st of June to talk about some fun stuff going on in Bloomington, Monroe County throughout the summertime. So we've got some packed shows over the next few weeks, and I'm working on some more things as well to fill in throughout the coming weeks and months. But there was this meme going around, and I know that's probably meme, I think is how it's actually pronounced, but one of these images on Facebook going around that today, Friday the 13th, was also a full moon, so everybody needed to be protective and everything. I don't know if anybody double checks this information, but there's no full moon tonight. Full moon's not for another week or so. So if you do see one of those things that says the full moon, Friday the 13th, just simmer down a little bit. Don't click share. Don't click like. You can prove that you actually read and learned and found out that, no, there is not a full moon tonight. So that's your other little tidbit of information for you. IU Hoosiers baseball are playing their first of the last three games here in Bloomington tonight. They are out at the BART for the first of three, and may have some scores in a little bit to see what we've got going on. The first pitch was just after 6:05 tonight. We're going to take a break, come back with your forecast for the weekend, some interesting local news, some national news as well that we'll dive into here very shortly. And again, Sonia Pruitt with IU Health Bloomington Hospital will be on in just a little bit to talk about Stroke Awareness Month. Facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview. And don't forget, we're streaming 24/7 over at WGCLradio.com. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with me right here on The Bloomington Review. Welcome back to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you, and your forecast for the weekend is a little bit wet yet again. Tonight, Friday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms going into the early morning with low around 47. Then on Saturday, 30% chance of showers early in the morning, partly sunny though with a high near 56 throughout the day. Saturday night, partly cloudy, low around 39. It's May, low in the 30s? What? Then on Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 60. And then Sunday night, low in the low 40s. Rain is called for every day next week, as early next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So keep your dial tuned into WGCL for all your weather all of the time. Let's get you some local news here before we get to Sonia Pruitt and our discussion of Stroke Awareness Month. Bloomington officials are proposing a 22% increase in both water and sewer rates to provide more revenue for stabilization and ongoing maintenance of the water treatment and distribution system. According to the Herald Times this week, residents will notice the increase both in their water bills as well as in marked improvements to infrastructure. The rate change is intended to provide revenue to address shortfalls in the funding available to address ongoing capital improvement needs. An analysis by Indianapolis-based Crowe Horwath showed a need for about $2.8 million per year in capital replacement needs for the water system and about $4.5 million annually for the sewer system. Sam Frank is the Utility Service Board president and said it has been 4 years since the last rate increase, adding if they are to continue to be good stewards of the water infrastructure, then this is a reasonable step. On the water side, the utilities department is looking to make changes to decrease levels of disinfection byproducts that are close to the maximum level allowed under state and federal environmental regulations, as well as to replace infrastructure with a particular focus on the oldest water mains and to implement a smart meter initiative. We've talked about these water issues over the last few weeks here on the Bloomington Review. The replacement of the water mains, particularly those that are 75 years old or older, have definitely reached their end of their life cycle. That accounts for about 20% of Bloomington's water system. And so that will all help decrease the number of main breaks throughout the city. On the sewer side, the biggest expense coming out of the increase will be on a project to deal with sewer overflows around Grimes Lane near the site of the future Switchyard Park. Fixing that issue, according to the HT, will cost about $6.5 million spread out over a few years. Customers are not going to feel the full increase all at once. If this measure is approved by both the Bloomington Utilities Service Board and the Bloomington City Council, it will then be moving on for final action at the end of May. Talking about our city government, also on Thursday this week, Mayor John Hamilton filled two key positions officially in his office with people who have been fulfilling those roles for some time now. Hamilton announced that Mick Renheisen, who previously had been the Parks Administrator and stepped into the position of Deputy Mayor on January 1st, is going to continue as Deputy Mayor of Bloomington, dropping the interim from his title. Renheisen said on Thursday, shortly after the announcement, that the move to remain Deputy Mayor, though always on the table, wasn't a decision he wanted to rush into because he loved being Parks Administrator so much. The mayor also announced on Thursday that Mary Catherine Carmichael will continue fulfilling the role of communications director, which she was appointed to on January 1st. That means that the administration is ready to move forward with efforts to seek those open department director positions. They will begin a national search next week for directors of the Bloomington Parks and Rec Department and the Bloomington Economic and Sustainable Development Department. On the Messel trial that's been back in the news in the last few days, Daniel Messel's murder trial, which is expected to last more than 2 weeks, will be continued from June 1st to sometime later in the summer. Brown County Prosecutor Ted Adams maintained his position that the trial should go on as planned for June. Subpoenas had been issued to family of victim Hannah Wilson, who was a 22-year-old Indiana University senior, beaten to death a year ago. Adams said during the hearing, "We remain set for June 1st. However, when the Brown County Circuit Judge Judith Stewart asked defense attorney Dori Marion if she could be prepared for the trial on June 1st, Marion shook her head and said no. In her motion to continue the trial, she said recent evidence received from the prosecution, including cell phone records and blood spatter testimony, requires more time to investigate. Marion, reiterating her client's concern about what she called, quote, inaccurate media reports, suggesting Messel might be connected to the 2011 disappearance of IU student Lauren Speer, proposed Stewart call test jurors. She said that they could gauge the effect of pretrial publicity on those potential jurors, and Marion's request for a change of venue remains under advisement. Ellisville town officials narrowly supported an ordinance this week that would approve an income tax increase to fund public safety. The Ellisville Town Council on Monday voted 3-2 to support proposing an ordinance to the Monroe County Income Tax Council that would add 25% to the county option income tax rate that is used to fund public safety. Presently, the county has an income tax rate of 1.095%. All five town council members generally expressed support for the underlying purpose of the tax increase, which is the funding of the county's central dispatch system. If this is passed, it would bring in an estimated $6.9 million in revenue. 30% of that would be used to cover funding shortfalls for the dispatch center, which is currently funded through a combination of county and city general funds, as well as the statewide 911 fund. Council President Scott Oldham, who also works for the Bloomington Police Department, said additional funding for the dispatch center is crucial because even though law enforcement agencies in the county have gained more territory and added more officers, putting more demand on the dispatch center, staffing at the center has not grown along with the increasing volume in calls. And finally, for our community of art lovers, the IU Art Museum is now under a new name thanks to a $15 million donation to the Indiana University Art Museum. Sydney and Lois Eskenazi of Indianapolis made the $15 gift earlier this week, and combining that with $20 million donated to the museum through the Indiana University Bicentennial Campaign, the museum will undergo a massive renovation with gallery enhancements, hopefully to be completed by the year 2020. The Eskenazis also are donating nearly 100 pieces of art, including 34 etchings, lithographs, and drawings. Some of the artists represented in the donation collection include Alexander Calder, Salvador Dali, Pablo Picasso, and Renoir. The collection also includes works by Keith Haring and Paul Jenkins, artists whose works are not currently in the museum's collection. Fantastic gift, and if you head out on East 7th Street out by the IU Auditorium, you can now see the new sign for the Sydney and Lois Eskenazi Art Museum, a wonderful gift to Indiana University. We're going to take a break and come back. We have Sonia Pruitt joining us in just a couple minutes for Stroke Awareness Month. Stay tuned, a very important show, some good information coming your way. We'll be right back on the Bloomington Review. Welcome back, everyone, to the Bloomington Review, and a first-time guest in the studio tonight, Sonia Pruitt. She is the Neuroscience Program Coordinator for IU Health Bloomington Hospital. How are you doing tonight, Sonia?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
Good. You and I met a few months back, not long after I started with the American Heart Association, and you kindly participated along with IU Health Bloomington Hospital with our Go Red for Women luncheon back in February, and we had some information there that the attendees got to see about stroke and things that go with it. And May is Stroke Awareness Month.
That is correct.
So that is why you're here tonight. I wanted to share with our listeners, we don't get into the medical side of things too often, but because of our relationship and what the cause is and everything, and like heart disease, I think people will know someone who has had a stroke or some kind of brain injury, if you will. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the basics of that and just kind of get your thoughts, insights, education to share with everyone. Tell first our listeners what a stroke is.
Well, there's actually two kinds of strokes. The first kind of stroke, what I normally teach our patients is there's two kinds of strokes. There's the ischemic stroke, which is when the blood supply to the brain has been cut off. And then there's the hemorrhagic stroke, and that is when the blood, brain has a bleed.
And when you talk about the hemorrhagic, can that occur anywhere in the body, or is that specifically in
the
brain?
These are specific to the brain.
Okay. About things that move. There's a clot that moves and whatnot, so that's why I wasn't sure if...
Well, so when we're talking about the ischemic stroke, it typically is caused by a clot. It can be a clot that forms in the brain, or it can be a clot that forms somewhere else and is transported to the brain through the blood flow.
Okay.
So sometimes it could be from your carotid arteries or from your heart or somewhere like that would just transport to the brain.
So let's talk about the risk factors of a stroke, because anybody, just like a heart attack, anybody can be impacted by a stroke very suddenly. So what are the risk factors that you talk with patients, families about regarding a stroke?
Well, there's two kinds of risk factors. There's what's called the modifiable risk factors, and those are things that you have control over. Mm-hmm. And then there are what's called the non-modifiable risk factors. So modifiable risk factors are things like diabetes, cholesterol, your hypertension, AFib, things like that. Those are things that you have some control over. Mm-hmm. You can work with your primary care physician to control those with medications and things like that. Non-modifiable risk factors are things like genetics. So if you have a family history of stroke, you're probably more likely, if you have a family history of stroke, your risk factor is higher. Exactly.
Sure.
Other things are
Genetic disorders and things that...
Gender, yeah. So like gender, mm-hmm. if you're a male over 55, you're more likely to have a stroke than your counterparts at that age.
Okay.
African Americans have a higher risk for strokes than the Caucasian. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that are non-modifiable. You don't really have any control over those things. So it makes our modifiable risk factors much more important because those are the things that you have to really kind of work on.
Talking about the genetic side of things, if someone in your family, a grandparent, parent, has had a stroke, does that make you more likely to have one as well? Or is it typically more of an individual case basis?
Well, your risk factor is definitely higher, mm-hmm. and partially because you probably have the same kind of risks as far as diabetes or hypertension. So, yeah, it does make your risk factor a little bit higher, but it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that you will have a stroke. Mm-hmm. You definitely need to watch for that, though. Be aware of that.
So one of the things that the Heart Association and the American Stroke Association have come up with is FAST, F-A-S-T. And I know that you talk about this a lot, and I got you some information about this to share with folks a couple weeks ago for Stroke Awareness Month. Talk about what FAST is for our listeners.
Well, FAST is a great acronym for identifying the stroke symptoms that a person might be having. So when we're talking about FAST, we talk about the F for the face.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice that somebody might think they were having a stroke, you would ask them to smile, and you could clearly see maybe some facial droop. That might mm-hmm. be an indicator of a stroke. The A in the FAST acronym.
Stop you for just a second. When you say a facial droop, I've mm-hmm. seen things. Is it in an eye? Is it in the mouth?
It would be in the mouth.
Okay.
So you would ask them to smile, mm-hmm. and that would definitely you'd be able to see
a noticeable unevenness, if
exactly,
you will.
Exactly.
Is it typically on one side? I know it's one side or the other usually, but is it typically right side, left side? Does it matter?
It can be either, but it is typically on one side.
Okay.
So it could be, depending on where the clot, where you had a clot in the brain, that's mm-hmm. where you'd be able to see on one side or the other a facial droop.
Okay. So talking about the acronym of FAST, F is for the face. Mm-hmm. What does A stand for?
A stands for the arms. So you would ask the person to hold their arms out straight in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you would notice if they were having a stroke, you might notice that one arm might be heavier than the other. They may not be able to hold it up against gravity. And in that case, that could indicate a stroke as well.
Okay.
So then we talk about the S mm-hmm. for speech. Mm-hmm. I would ask them to say a few words. You might hear some slurred speech, or you might also hear some words that, like if you ask them to repeat something and then they couldn't do that,
right.
that could be an indicator as well. So those three things together are all three clear indicators of a stroke. So the T in the FAST acronym means time.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the most important thing, and that means that you need to get this person to the hospital as quickly as possible. So we ask that people don't drive the person to the hospital, but call 911 and have them come and pick the person up.
And your perfect lead in there. We're talking with neuroscience program coordinator Sonia Pruitt. She's with IU Health Bloomington Hospital. Going back to the FAST part, before we get into the transportation for treatment, if you will, when a stroke victim is going through it right then and there, are they feeling these symptoms? Are they feeling the heaviness in one arm? Are they feeling their mouth droop? Are they feeling anything at all, or do they think everything is normal?
They most definitely are feeling something.
Okay.
The typical signs of a stroke are numbness and tingling. So mm-hmm. you might feel like one side of your body is kind of that sleepy feeling. The other thing is, a lot of times patients that I talk to will tell me that they knew what they wanted to say, but the words were coming out wrong,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't figure out why other people couldn't understand them. So there's definitely some things that they know are going on.
Does a stroke typically happen to someone when they are awake, or can a stroke happen while they're sleeping?
It can happen anytime.
Okay.
Usually we get patients early in the morning. They'll get up in the morning and notice that something's wrong. And then we get them to the hospital quickly. But it really can happen anytime.
Okay. One of the things that I had the opportunity to be part of, a meeting a little while back, you and Chad Reynolds and a variety of folks at IU Health Bloomington Hospital talking about the timing internally of, you know, with emergency services and things like that, and with a stroke, with a heart attack, timing is of the essence, obviously. So I appreciate you saying about not driving the person in. It's like with a heart attack, you know, if somebody's having a heart attack and they think they can drive themselves in, you're probably not going to make it to the hospital. You're probably not going to feel well enough. So talk about the timing in terms of the treatment for somebody experiencing a stroke.
Well, so when you experience a stroke, we want you to come to the hospital as quickly as possible. We don't want you to drive yourself or have anyone else drive you. We want you to call 911. What happens is, when the EMS come to pick you up, they will do what they call a Cincinnati stroke scale. And that's a quick assessment of your stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll call ahead. They will call ahead to the hospital and let us know that they're bringing you in. That means that our whole stroke team will meet you in the ED when you get there. So you're not going through registration. And the nice thing about the EMS bringing you in, they're running every stoplight. They're not going to they're not going to wait. They're going to get you to the hospital as quickly as possible. We have a medication that we can give that basically will break the clot up.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, we have to give it in 3 hours. So you have to get to the hospital quickly. That can restore the blood flow to the brain and lessen the disability that you might have from a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important, very important, to get there as quickly as possible.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more with Sonia Pruitt in just a little bit. We'll talk about some treatment options and some differences of stroke, again, that Sonia talked about a little bit ago as well. We'll go into some of the things that individuals can do to take care of themselves to help prevent one as well. And next week, Sonia and I are going to be out talking about this, and we'll give you a little preview of that as well. Stay with us. We'll be back in a couple minutes here on the Bloomington Review. Welcome back, everyone, to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman along with Sonia Pruitt. She is the Neuroscience Program Coordinator with IU Health Bloomington Hospital. May is Stroke Awareness Month, and we're talking about the signs and the symptoms of a stroke and how to get to treatment right away and things like that. We're going to put a lot of information up at facebook.com/thebloomingtonreview and also wgclradio.com as well. The thing I want to emphasize, and Sonia will back me up on this, I know, the things that we're talking about are very general and broad-based. We're giving kind of the shotgun approach, but that still means that if you see someone experiencing these symptoms, the FAST acronym, get to a medical professional, get the medical care right away.
Exactly. That's exactly what we need to do.
And don't think, well, I'm not really sure if it is or it isn't. Don't take your health in jeopardy. Just go and do what needs to be done.
Generally, I tell patients if they do have any symptoms and they think maybe it's a stroke, go ahead and come to the hospital. The worst thing that can happen is that you can come in and find out that you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst thing. And that's better. It's better to be safe than sorry. And so I always try to make sure that we make sure everybody is aware that coming to the hospital is not a bad thing. We want to make sure that we have you there in time to treat.
Right. We're talking about stroke awareness, as we mentioned, the treatment. Sonia mentioned a little bit before, time is of the essence, 3 hours getting in there. Beyond that, if someone does experience a stroke, you know, there are so many different potential outcomes of, you know, some minor relearning of things to some major life changes, if you will. Talk about the rehab process. I know that you're more on the treatment side, but talk about rehab for stroke victims and maybe how that's changed in your time in this profession.
So we know from the Stroke Association tells us that stroke is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's also one of the leading causes of disability. So the chances of you having a disability after experiencing a stroke are really high. What happens when you come to the hospital, we go through a series of tests, we confirm the stroke, and we try to find out why the stroke happened. And then we can start to educate the patients on how to prevent it going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, a patient, if their stroke symptoms are pretty minor, they can go home with maybe some outpatient therapy. Depending on how severe those symptoms are, the patient they could go to, we have an inpatient rehab there at IU Health Bloomington Hospital, and it's more for acute care. And that rehab facility, depending on the patient and their deficits, we'll teach them things like how to do their activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. So the basic idea is to get them back home as independently as
getting up, going to the bathroom, getting dressed, all those kinds of things.
All those things, being able to take care of themselves in a way that they were kind of accustomed to before.
Right.
So that's the goal. And so that's part of the rehab. The other thing is there's a lot of education that goes along with it. So we want to teach not only the patient but their family how to prevent strokes going forward, and then how to take care of that patient as well.
One of the things that you and I talked about before we came on the air is kind of a general question, but I honestly didn't know the answer to it until I asked you a little bit ago. What are the differences between a stroke and an aneurysm? Because I think some people believe they're interchangeable terms.
They're not necessarily. So there, as I said in the beginning, there's two types of strokes. There's the ischemic, which is where the blood flow to the brain is basically cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the hemorrhagic stroke. So a hemorrhagic stroke is not necessarily an aneurysm. A person can have an aneurysm in their brain and can have it for quite some time as long as it just can be monitored. As long as it doesn't get bigger, it's usually okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hemorrhagic stroke is something that happens quickly. It can be an outpooching, sort of like an aneurysm, but where it would outpooch and then burst and cause that bleed in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could just be where the arteries are not very strong or the vasculature of the brain is not strong enough to maintain the pressure of the blood,
mm-hmm.
and that could burst. And that could be a hemorrhagic stroke.
I've heard of
people. So there's two different things, really.
I've heard of people have, a heart aneurysm and things like that. As I asked before about the having a clot that suddenly takes off into your body and causing mm-hmm. things, so I'm glad you clarified that a little bit. Talk a little bit about the caregivers, the spouses and the family members of stroke victims and what they can do to help in the recovery process if it is a minor or a major health incident.
Well, so a stroke we know is a pretty significant event in somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does it impact the patient, but it impacts their families as well. We do have a support group that's here in Bloomington, and it's for not only the patients, but it's also for their caregivers. Depending on the severity of the stroke, it can be pretty significant for the caregiver. If you want to be able to manage their care at home, you may have to do a lot of things for that patient, like be able to bathe them, move them, transfer them from their chairs to a wheelchair, things mm-hmm. like that. So it can be a pretty big job taking care of a stroke patient, depending on the severity of their deficits. So it's very important to know those risk factors prior so you can kind of prevent it.
And have, as a caregiver, a great deal of patience and compassion as well.
That and be able to, I think one of the things that we recognize in stroke care is that caregivers do have what they call burnout.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be able to have some time on their own and be able to take care of themselves as well, because caring for another person can be extremely taxing.
Absolutely.
So
there have been a lot of people I've known personally and professionally have had to do that, and they do it with love.
Exactly.
But everybody needs a break every now and again.
Exactly. Exactly.
One of the things that I was going to ask you about regarding a stroke, are there typically, the impact of it, does it typically impact more physical or mental, or is it, can it be both? And what I'm asking is, you know, someone who has a stroke may have like a limp, or one side may be a little bit less functioning, if you will. Other people may have a physical, be physically fine, but may have more cognitive issues. What determines that?
What really determines it is where it land, where the clot happens in the brain. So where the stroke actually is in the brain is what determines that. Mm-hmm. And it can be anything from physical deficits, but it can be emotional deficits. It can be cognitive. It just really depends on where that stroke happens in the brain and what part of the brain it's affecting. So we know that like in the left frontal lobe is more of your cognitive or
Your thinking, and
it could be speech. You may have no physical disability, but you may have some, may be unable to speak at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it just really depends on where that stroke hits,
okay,
as to what effects you can have. And all of those things can be worked on through the rehab, mm-hmm, outpatient rehab or inpatient rehab. But those will be things that you'd have to work on going forward for some time probably.
The American Heart Association, for those who don't know, is also the American Stroke Association.
Exactly.
And they have come up with 7 different guidelines that I think a lot of us probably know. We were probably taught it in junior high health class about how to live a healthy life. But there are very good tips for not only for cardiac health, but also for stroke prevention as well. And we touched a little bit about these in the previous segment, but let's kind of run through those things again, those risk factors and what to do before we let you go, Sonia.
Okay, so when we talk about risk factors, we're talking about things, and these are risk factors that we have control over. So we're talking about hypertension,
mm-hmm,
diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, and things like AFib. Those are things you have control over. What I typically tell my patients is, if you have hypertension, know what your blood pressure parameters are. You can manage it with medication. Mm-hmm. You can also manage any of these things with diet and exercise. And we live in a community that's great for diet and exercise. There's always a 5K going on. We, yep, have the Beeline. We have some other, every park around here has a walking path.
Mm-hmm.
So what they recommend is about 30 minutes of moderate exercise a day. So that's your diet and exercise, and we have lots of good stores around here,
sure,
that have a lot of
and
good,
the farmers market.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about your cholesterol, we usually recommend if your LDL, which is your bad cholesterol, if that's over 70, we usually recommend that you are on a statin. Those are the guidelines that we use at the hospital. And then diabetes, you want to know what your A1C is. All of those things are things that you can manage, and you should have those conversations with your doctor about what the expectations are for those. AFib is an irregular heartbeat that can cause a stroke, so we recommend that you talk to your doctor and you be on some sort of a medication.
Okay.
If you have a stroke, what we will do when we discharge you from the hospital is you will probably be on a statin, which is a cholesterol-lowering medication, and we'll put you on some sort of a anticoagulant, like an aspirin or a Plavix or something of that nature, mm-hmm, that will keep your blood thin and not clotting.
Right.
Those things are important because the modifiable risk factors have a big impact on the non-modifiable risk factors. So,
and again, for our listeners, everybody who's hearing this information, please know every case is individual, as we've said before. So talk to your family physician, if you have someone who has experienced a stroke in your family, talk with the people on that neurological team. I mean, whoever you go to for medical care, talk to them about that. Say, I heard this or want to know more. I mean, it's your health. Be proactive.
Right. So we know 80% of strokes can be prevented, and those are the things, knowing what your personal risk factors are is the way to prevent those strokes. If you've already had a stroke, there is a support group here in Bloomington. They meet once a month at Sherwood Oaks, and that information will be on the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any questions or anything, feel free to get on the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association website. And there's also a National Stroke Association website that will help. They've got a ton of information that's very helpful.
Wonderful. I mentioned in the last segment, you and I next Friday, May 20th, are going to be out at Stonecroft out on the west side of town. Is it 4 to 6, I think, is that when we're going to be out there? They're doing an open house and a variety of local health professionals and things. So if you want to know more and you want to meet Sonia or myself, Sonia's much nicer than I am. I'm just...
Okay.
We'll be out on the west side next Friday the 20th from 4 to 6 at Stonecroft. Please stop by. It's a free event open house, and all the best. So thanks again for coming in. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. You did a very nice job
on your first radio gig. You really did. We're going to come back with more. Stay with us here on the Bloomington Review. Let's get you some sports updates before we wrap up the show tonight. The IU Hoosiers baseball team is playing their final three games at the BART for this season. They're 29-17 overall and 13-5 in the conference. They had a win over Kentucky earlier this week. Tonight they're playing Illinois in the first of a three-game series, and then they move on to play Louisville midweek next week, and then Nebraska next weekend, May 19th, 20th, and 21st. Then they will be out in Omaha, if all goes well, for the Big Ten tournament on May 25th through the 29th. Of course, you can check all the updates there for the Hoosiers at iuhoosiers.com. IU Athletic Director Fred Glass announced on Friday that he has accepted the resignation of Barry King as IU's head women's water polo coach. King has served 19 seasons as the head coach of the Lady Hoosiers after helping make women's water polo a varsity sport back in 1998. Until a new coach is hired, assistant coach Megan Poland will handle coaching duties for the program. In addition, Glass has organized a transition team to help oversee the women's water polo program that will be led by assistant athletic director and water polo sport administrator Eric Neuberger. And then also from the Hoosiers, the Lady Hoosiers women's rowing team are traveling up to Eagle Creek Park this weekend for the Big Ten Rowing Championship. Preliminary heats are going to take place Saturday at 5 p.m., and then the finals go underway at 9 o'clock on Sunday. So they are up for some big stuff up there in Indianapolis. For the IU football team, two more kickoffs have been set for the upcoming season, including homecoming. The Hoosiers and the Nebraska Cornhuskers are going to meet in Bloomington Saturday, October 15th. Game is scheduled to kick off at 3:30 p.m. That's going to be the first meeting between the programs since Nebraska joined the Big Ten back in 2011. The last time IU and Nebraska played in football, 1978, and the Hoosiers lead the all-time series 9-7-3. It was also announced on Wednesday that the October 22nd game at Northwestern is scheduled to kick off at noon. That is their homecoming, and the Hoosiers will be their opponent there. Monday this week, the Big Ten Network announced that IU's conference home opener against Michigan State on October 1st will be a late kick, 8 p.m. Eastern for that one. So late night for the little kiddies, but a lot of good fun out there as well. Reds baseball here on WGCL. They're going to be following us up Friday night right here, 7:05 p.m., and they take on Philadelphia for two games there. Then next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they are playing Cleveland. The first two games are at Cleveland. Wednesday is back home, if I'm reading the schedule correctly, and I take that back. Monday, Tuesday at Cleveland, Wednesday, Thursday in Cincinnati. So back-to-back, but home and away for those games. And then next Friday and Saturday, the Reds take on Seattle at home. So that's your sports update for everything I think I've got. We've got to wrap up the show. Stay with me. We'll be right back. Just a couple minutes left in the program. Thanks again to Sonia Pruitt for joining us this evening and talking about Stroke Awareness Month and all of the things that go with that. I'm going to put some things up at facebook.com/thebloomingtonreview, some downloads, if you will, some infographics if you want some particular information to share, and then a lot of information we will also link up at the WGCLradio.com, our podcast page. Hopefully have all of that up by Saturday morning at noon. Your forecast for the weekend, kind of wet. A chance of showers and thunderstorms late tonight into early tomorrow morning. Low around 47 this evening. Then on Saturday, 30% chance of rain early in the morning. Then partly sunny with a high near 56. Partly cloudy on Saturday night, a low around 39. And on Sunday, mostly sunny, a high near 60. Rain is expected Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 20 to 60% chance. But just check in again, all your weather all the time, right here at WGCL Radio and, of course, WGCLRadio.com. www.jimminman.com. Julie Warren always sends us good stuff to consider for the weekend, and this is no exception. Saturday, 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., it's the Elephant and Piggies We Are in a Play. That's at the Ivy Tech John Waldron Arts Center downtown. It's kind of a vaudevillian musical romp, if you will, all kinds of fun stuff for kids, so you can check that out. Then tonight, Friday night, of course, Food Truck Friday is going on both at the Chocolate Moose and down at Smith's Shoe Center on South Walnut Street, so you can check those out, get some good food. They've got good music and different things. Then tonight, Friday night at the Bluebird, 8 p.m., Ricky Skaggs. He's a 14-time Grammy Award winner. He's going to be bringing some great bluegrass music to the Bluebird tonight. And so you're going to hear some great stuff if you head out there this evening. Saturday, of course, is the Bloomington Farmers Market, and it's also a fair of the arts. You can check out some great local artist work. And I believe Glass and Julie said that tomorrow is also Market with the Mayor, Meet with the Mayor, Meet the Market Mayor. Yes, so our Mayor Hamilton will be out at the Farmers Market tomorrow as well. And the Bloomington Symphony Orchestra for Friday the 13th. No, it's not tonight. On Saturday evening at the Buskirk Chumley Theater, it is Judgment Day, the final concert of the Bloomington Symphony Orchestra for the season. 7:30 showtime, 8 o'clock, or excuse me, $18 for adults, $10 for students and kids for free. You can check all of that out at visitbloomington.com. Next week on the show, first-time guest, Mr. Craig Hickman with ProBlue Technology. He's going to be on talking about internet safety, a lot of things that we may take for granted and not think about. He is going to share with us some tips and ideas and all of that good stuff. If you've got any questions about that, you can go to facebook.com/thebloomingtonreview. Let us know what your internet questions are, if you will. Then the following week, we had a schedule change, so hopefully we will have a local estate planning attorney jump on board with us for that program. And then early in June is Julie Warren. She will be on talking about all of the fun stuff going on in Bloomington and Monroe County. And, of course, you can always find a lot of that information at visitbloomington.com. Again, if you missed earlier in the program, keep in mind for Stroke Awareness Month, FAST. That's your test. That's your key right there. FAST means four things to look for if you think someone is having a stroke. Face drooping in the eyes, in the smile, somewhere in there. Arm weakness. If one arm tends to feel a little bit heavier to the person, there may be a sign of something more severe going on. Speech difficulty. It can be saying words. It can be repeating words. A variety of things. But if they are having trouble getting words out, it's another warning sign of a stroke. The T, time to call 911. Don't take it upon yourself. Get the emergency crews in. They're trained and ready for it. Everybody have a great weekend. Appreciate y'all. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.